Mic check, 1, 2, 1, 2. In the place to be, the lowercase MC, solely, Deo, Gloria, what? Shout out to Shaolin, man. You know what? I'm here for a good time, not for a long time. So I'm not going to prolong the time, man. Let me do one thing before I get this show on the road. Excuse me. Let me do the obligatory tap in tweet. Okay. 61. Like at halftime, Boston's up by 3. All right. Here we go. Did that. Yo, before I get this started, I am curious, and I'm definitely going to clip this and put it on TikTok. If you watch Shogun, I won't take up too much of your time talking about this, but if you watch Shogun and you have completed the series finale was yesterday, right? If you watch that show, here's what I want to know. I put this poll up at Brains and Bars on Twitter. First of all, let me give the official opening. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. No matter where you may find yourself as you listen to this and you're tuned in to the only sports podcast at Brains and Bars, It's a Black and White Thing featuring A1 and A Ward. Please remember you can check out every episode of It's a Black and White Thing by going to the podcast app of your choice, searching for It's a Black and White Thing. Or Brains and Bars. That's Google Podcasts, that's Spotify, that's Apple Podcasts. You can also check us out on YouTube. We go live normally every Tuesday, Thursday. Today's a Wednesday. I got a little free time. I'm normally not free on Wednesdays, but I'm free today. And you can check us out there. You can check us out on social media by going to at Brains and Bars on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and TikTok. All right, so real quick, because I'm here for a good time, not for a long time. As you can see, I still got the work clothes on. I didn't even change out into like some kind of different attire, right? Because I'm here again for a good time, not for a long time. So shout out to A Ward in his absence, by the way. He's celebrating a birthday, not his, but a family member. So shout out to him in his absence. Hope he's doing well. I hope the bars for Rock are ready. Let me say that. I hope the bars are rock for ready. I know he's, you know, in the world of battle rap, these guys are always writing. They're always prepping. They're always, you know, tweaking and trying to get the material just right for their opponent. But I hope at least most of the prep work has been done. And now it's just about fine tuning things and getting things where they need to be. So that being said, we move on. Again, so I'm finally making my way here. If you watch Shogun, I'm curious. I have a question for you. This is at Brains and Bars on Twitter. Go and vote. Share this because I want to get people's thoughts on this. Lord Torunaga, was he one of the good guys or was he one of the villains, right? Torunaga is one of the main characters on the show, along with Blackthorn, Lady Mariko, Yabushige, Ishido, Ochiba, Nokata, right? But one of the top three characters on the show in terms of importance, Lord Torunaga. Was he one of the bad guys, one of the villains, or was he one of the good guys? And I think there are lots of compelling reasons to think that he was both. I'm not going to go too deeply into that. I might sit down and might get wifey sit down. We talk about Shogun because I thought it was a good show. I didn't think it was a great show. I think people might have gassed a little bit talking about how great it was. I think some of the storytelling was good. Obviously, the cinematography, really dope. But yeah, anyway, compelling reasons to think that Torunaga was both, I guess, an anti-hero, if you will. But I don't think he was completely good. I don't think he was completely evil. I think he was completely strategic and cunning. But that's neither here nor there. All right, let's get into what we're here to get into, though. Real quick, you see the title. We're talking Reggie Bush getting his Heisman back. We're talking We're talking NBA playoffs. We're talking NFL, completing the mock draft, right? So let's jump into it from the breaking news for today. Reggie Bush, it was breaking news at like 8, 9 o'clock this morning. Reggie Bush is getting his Heisman, or it's not, he's not getting his Heisman back. He has received his Heisman, apparently, in a ceremony this morning in Florida, Ponte Vedra, Florida, with a select company of people. Reggie Bush was given back his Heisman trophy. If you are too young, which a lot of you might, depending on how old you are, you may not remember the story of why Reggie Bush had his Heisman taken away. Reggie Bush, one of the greatest college football players of all time, played on one of the generational teams of all time, the 2004-2005 USC Trojans. They had won, I think, back-to-back national championships, was seeking the three-peat. They ended up losing to Texas in the Rose Bowl. Classic game, one of the greatest college football games ever played. Losing to Vince Young-led Texas Longhorns team. He won the Heisman that 2005 season. A Yahoo report a few years later came out that Reggie Bush had taken money from like a marketing agency. He had refused it. Now, here's the thing. He had taken his money from a marketing agency, which was not legal, but not illegal. The problem was is that he took this money, but he did not pay it back. In those days, it was not uncommon for an agent or someone to maybe front you some money. If you were in the process of going pro, right? You want to start to live that pro lifestyle a little bit early. You would get fronted some bread, normally from an agent, not necessarily from a marketing agency. Laron, what's good? Hope you're doing good. And he refused to pay it back. They said, yo, if you don't pay it back, we're snitching. We're going to tell on you. He refused to pay it back. They snitch. Yahoo Sports runs a story. NCAA investigates. They end up stripping the Heisman from Reggie. They end up stripping the national championship from USC. I think the first time in history that it happened. They put them on a near-death penalty. Pete Carroll leaves, right? And this kind of starts the tailspin of USC as a great program. And they've been trying to find their way back since. There was a time where Reggie Bush could not even be on USC's campus. He was not allowed to come back to the university. He had the Heisman Trophy. He had kept it for a while. And I think Dan Patrick's show kind of did this story about, hey, Reggie never gave back his Heisman Trophy. Real hall monitor behavior, although I like Dan Patrick. And he ultimately returned the Heisman to the Heisman Trust. The Heisman Trust has again put out tweets, had a ceremony. They gave him back his Heisman Trophy. So to me, I am excited for Reggie. I think that is great news. I know Johnny Manziel said that he was not going to attend any further Heisman trophies. What's good? He was not going to attend any further Heisman activities until Reggie got his Heisman back. He thought he deserved it, in part because now NIL, payment for players, is legal. He thought that was the reason it should be overturned. And he also thought that what happened to Reggie, what he got a raw deal. And I agree. If there would never be a conversation on this show, as long as I'm around, where we talk about college athletes and money, where I won't say that the players deserve to be paid. They are the revenue generators. They're the ones who allow this sport to be televised and seen and make billions of dollars and allow coaches to make obscene amounts of money. Assistant coaches' salaries continue to go up. All the beautiful structures and buildings that get built, the athletic facilities, are built off the backs of these players. And so NIL is nice. To me, the players need to be paid. And for all of the hand-wringing of NIL, which I do think it was good consequences that have gone bad. But for all the good that I think that NIL has done, I think if you want to stop the transfer portal, if you want to slow down NIL and pay for play, what you need to do is you need to have the colleges themselves pay the players, stop treating them as student athletes, treat them as employees, and then you can sign them to contracts where they can't just up and leave. Now, I admit that that's a little bit of a slippery slope argument because I personally want those young men to be able to get paid and get an education. And my concern is if you treat them as employees, one thing will happen while the other will be ignored. And I don't, if you are of a certain age, the name Dexter Manley, will ring a bell to you. But if you don't know who Dexter Manley is, just look up Dexter Manley. And I believe if you put in the word illiterate in the Google search, it should return a story for you about Dexter Manley and how he was just pushed along through the system without truly getting an education and what that meant for him in his life. Right. So as much as I want the players to be paid, as much as I want the players to be treated as employees and not only student athletes, I also don't want them to completely bypass that student part, because that part is very important. But that's neither here nor there. And so let's get back to Reggie Bush. There's been a lot of response to this. A lot of it has been, hey, that is great for Reggie. I'm excited for him. I'm happy for him. But some of the conversation has been, well, you know, I don't think that Reggie should get his Heisman back, because I get that the landscape of college sports has changed with NIL and pay for play and all this good stuff. But he broke a rule. And since he broke a rule, just because the rule has been modified, it does not mean that all of a sudden now that retribution has to be made. Now, here's where I disagree with that. First of all, this was not the NCAA who was reversing their decision. It was the Heisman Trust. The Heisman Trust works in conjunction with the NCAA. They are not an NCAA entity, right? So the Heisman Trust, you know, rest in peace, O.J. Simpson, right? But if they decided that because of O.J.'s kind of sordid past, controversial past, that they wanted to revoke his Heisman, they could do so. Now, that would be a highly, hotly debated topic. But hey, that again, that's not for me to adjudicate, right? I'm just using that as an example. So the Heisman Trust can choose to do what they want with the Heisman Trophy and who gets to receive the award and who does not. To me, their decision to reverse was a good one. I think that, and here's for this reason. I don't think that USC was not behind the scheme to pay Reggie Bush, right? This was something that Reggie Bush and his people worked outside of USC. This was not an enticement or an inducement for him to sign with USC. Now, maybe he got bread underneath the table. I don't know. They haven't come out and said that yet, right? But to me, though, he did not cheat the system, or he did not cheat USC. He did not utilize USC to get this money. This was something that he did on his own. And so as a lone actor, to me, USC should not have been punished for that, in my personal opinion, right? That was not a school cheating thing. This isn't North Carolina's, fake class scandal, right? Like that, it's not that. This was Reggie Bush acting alone. For the people who say, well, he broke the rule then just because they changed it. And I've seen people use the, well, if I go speeding, if the speed limit says 35 and I do 70 in the 35 and then 10 years and I get a ticket for that and I have to pay a fine for that, and they change the rules 10 years later and now you can do 70 in that zone, should I then be able to sue to get my money back? Am I entitled to compensation? And the answer is no, you're not entitled to compensation. My return or follow-up question to you would be, okay, you did 70 in the 35. Did your local newspaper run a story about you speeding? Because that's what happened to Reggie Bush. The NCAA does not have subpoena power. They didn't do some investigation and say, oh, we have on strong authority that you received this money from this marketing agency. No, Yahoo Sports got the story because Reggie refused to pay the marketing agency back. And so since he refused to pay them back, they said, we telling. And so they told. Yahoo runs the story. Then the NCAA investigates, right? So to me, that, well, if I break a rule and then they change the rule, should that matter, does not hold weight to me, because the entity that is paid to govern and oversee rules violations would have never known if Reggie simply would have paid the money back. And I'm pretty sure, maybe, I don't know, I haven't watched interviews, that if Reggie would have had the opportunity to do it again, maybe He pays them the money he owes them. God knows he had it as an NFL player because it wasn't an ungodly amount. Maybe he pays that amount and they go on. I've seen other people say, well, does this open a door for the Fab Five to say we want our banners put back up at Michigan? Does this lead to, I've already seen a story of SMU requesting that they be, that their records be reinstated and that they be given money back because of what happened. And again, if you are not young enough, I live in a world now where there are younger people who don't know about these things. SMU received the death penalty for flagrantly violating the rules. And this is where, again, I hear that argument and I go, no, I don't agree. SMU, I don't want to say flagrantly, but they violated the rules. They knew the rules. They were paying players, giving them cars, giving them cash in paper bags, giving family members benefits to entice their kids to go to the school. This is during the 80s, the heyday of Craig Erickson and Eric Dickerson, right? Like they were enticing kids to come to their school by paying them, right? And they weren't the only one. They just were outside with it. Like they weren't trying to hide it. They were like, yo, my man, look, you see my man in that Corvette right there? That could be you, baby. Do you want the Firebird with the T-tops? We got that the new model. We got the new booty that just came out off the showroom floor. Like they was wilding with it. And so they were so flagrant with how they went about paying players underneath the table that the NCAA had to come down hard on them, right? I'll pick on Michigan for a second and their sign stealing scandal. There is a Grand Canyon size chasm difference between Reggie Bush and Michigan, right? As far as the East is from the West, that is violating the rules. That is an integrity of the game issue, right? What happened at Michigan with the Fab Five, allegedly, right? Because I think those guys have denied that what took place actually took place. That is more, a little bit more in line with what Reggie Bush was doing, or what Ohio State and the players getting the tattoos. That is more in line with the Reggie Bush thing. And I personally don't see a problem for that. Now, shout out to my dad. My dad said NIL and transfer portal have ruined college sports. However, I do believe the athletes should receive some type of compensation. Listen, I've already said it. I'll say it again. Athletes generate the revenue. Athletes should get paid by the schools directly, not by some NIL arm that is attached, that has a relationship with the university. No, Texas, Notre Dame, USC, Michigan, Florida, Georgia, Bama, they should pay the players. And if your response to that is, well, how do we make sure that everybody gets paid? I don't know. Not my problem. Figure it out. They figured out everything else, right? Sit down, figure out how to pay the players from your own pockets and make sure that everyone is compensated according to the revenue that they bring in. Everybody can't get paid like kings and queens. Somebody's got to take a back seat and let the people who bring in the revenue get paid accordingly, right? True. This comment says that death penalty killed the SMU football program and it's never been the same. These are the risks you take, right? SMU knew what they were doing was out of pocket. They knew what they were doing was wrong. But for them, that didn't matter. What mattered to them is that they were relevant and that in the grand scheme of things, that they mattered. And so, hey, if you want to risk it for the biscuit, who am I to tell you no? I would tell you it's probably not a good idea because all money ain't good money. But if you're willing to risk it, go ahead, take your shot, man. See what happens. But don't come hollering, don't come crying to me when it all goes wrong, because I, A1 told you, don't do it. All right. So let me know what y'all think, man. How do you feel about Reggie Bush getting his Heisman back? Was it a good thing, bad thing? What does this mean for the NCAA going forward? Again, if I'm the NCAA, I tell SMU, the Michigan basketball team, the Ohio State football team, all of these teams that have been busted for sanctions. Sorry, guys, that ain't what my name is Bennett and I ain't in it. They ain't got nothing to do with me. So our ruling still stands, right? I would also, here's my last little bit of advice for the NCAA. I would advise them to figure out a way to handle these punishments a little bit more swiftly, a little bit more expediently. Don't take years to adjudicate these things because, again, you're not punishing the people involved. You're normally punishing people who have come years down the road, right? I said this before when talking about Michigan and the sign stealing scandal. I don't care to see any sanctions handed down 4 years down the road when Jim Harbaugh's gone. Most of the major principals are gone. All the players have now graduated and gone on to either a life in football or a career that isn't a sport, right? Either hand down punishment immediately and swiftly or just let it rock, man. But we don't have time for you to let these slow gears of justice turn. And in 20 years, you just now handing out a punishment. All right. But at Brains and Bars, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, TikTok, IG. Let me know what y'all think about Reggie Bush getting the Heisman back, man. All right, let's move on to the next topic. Let's talk a little bit of NBA. We got the NBA playoffs happening right now. It is fantastic. And a couple of nights ago, we had two really great games go down between the Lakers and the Nuggets and the Knicks and the 76ers, both coming down to the wire. Last second shots to win the game. Highly, highly entertaining games all the way through. And let me say this for starters, man. Number one, I know Joel Embiid and LeBron had a lot to say about officiating and calls and, you know, wondering what's going on, calls not going away. Guys, in the case of Philly, you were up, I believe, 8 with about a minute left. And then 5 with like about 30 or 40 seconds left. You got to close the game out. I understand that, yes, the last 2-minute report came out and said that Tyrese Maxey was indeed fouled, I think twice, right? That they should have called they should have been granted the timeout. I understand that. You have got to better manage the end of game situation. This isn't college basketball. I've rarely seen a team hit a shot, especially a team that is ahead, right? Normally in the NBA, if a team is winning, they hit the shot. As soon as the ball goes through the net, they call timeout so they can advance the ball to half court because it gives them a little better. Granted, while you can't run the baseline, you can't move like you can on the baseline after a made shot, it at least gives you the option of going to the backcourt, gives you just a little bit better angle to try to get that entry pass in. Why Nick Nurse or someone on Philly did not immediately call a timeout is beyond me. Why Kyle Lowry, when he was struggling to inbound the ball, didn't call a timeout is beyond me. Why one of the Philly basketball players, Embiid, Batum, Tobias Harris, why one of them didn't come towards the ball once they saw Maxey being double teamed is beyond me. Like, take responsibility for what you did wrong there. Do not try to shift the blame on the referees. Should they have called it? Yes. Right? Was the foul in the Laker game on D'Angelo Russell a foul? In my opinion, yes. I understand that he had already released the ball, but we see all the time where a player takes a jumper and he's hit on the wrist after he's released the shot and they call the foul. You have you have to give players space to land after they shoot the ball. That's called a foul under the interest of player safety, right? You have all these things that happen after a ball has been touched, passed, shot, whatever, that is a foul. If that's the case, that D'Angelo Russell play should have also been a foul. However, that was like in the third quarter. We're not talking about a Tyrese Maxey situation where it's 30 seconds left in the game. There's still a lot of game left to be played. LeBron James had a wide open 3 to win the game. LeBron James had a free throw that I think would have put the Lakers up 1 at near the end of the game that he missed as well. You had your opportunities. Oh, and in LA's instance, you were up 20. You were up 20. I don't want to hear no excuses about refereeing when you're up 20 in the playoff game. You got to take care of business, young man. What are we doing? Take some accountability. And in the case of Philly, look, I don't want to say the series is over, but the series is over. You have Joel Embiid, who was essentially out here playing on one leg. Tyrese Maxey, who's battling an illness. And I don't know, especially when you lose a game in that fashion, how you are able to bounce back, because mentally that is going to weigh on you. Because Joel Embiid said it, we should potentially be up two. We should be up two games to none instead of being down 0-2, because they played well enough to win both of those games. And while that should give you some confidence, I don't know how you figure you're going to beat this team four times in six games with your best player, your MVP caliber player, who is one movement away from potentially doing additional damage to his knee. I know they said that he can't really hurt anymore. He can't hurt it anymore. He can't do any more to it than he already has. It's a pain tolerance thing. But how much pain is one man going to be willing to endure being put down in a 2-0 lead where mentally you feel like you should have been up to? I'm sorry, or being down 0-2 when you feel like you should have been up 0-2. As far as the Lakers, much has been made about them, you know, not being able to beat Denver, having lost 10 games in a row. They have not beaten Denver since December of 2022. I have an anecdote to explain what's going on in that series. So when I first moved to Kansas City, I had a homie, a guy that I met fifth grade. Rest in peace, Quentin. He was my first friend when I moved to Kansas City. And being young men who were competitive, we competed in everything. And in just about every shape, form, or fashion, Quentin was better at everything, right? He was a little bit better than me academically at that age. He was a little bit taller than me. I ended up being 6'2". Quentin was 6'3", 6'4". Quentin was a bigger guy than me, more muscular than me, but he could move just as fast as I was. And when it came to video games, if we played, on Sega Genesis, there was a college football game. If we played that game 100 times, he would beat me 95 of those times, right? So it was rare that I was able to beat him in most competitions. And so there was a game we played of college football. One of us had Penn State, one of us had Miami. I can't remember who had who, but those were the teams. And again, he beat me most of the time, right, at that game. But to that this particular day, I had the glow in the first half. And I was running it up. It was 21-0 after one. It was 28-7 at halftime. And Quentin is hot. He's hot. He don't know what's going on, why the plays he normally runs ain't working, how I'm getting lucky, how am I able to stop his offense, so on and so forth. And me, I am not a huge trash talker, number one. I can talk some trash, but I'm not a huge trash talker. But when someone has had my number the way Q had my number all those times we played that game, I also am not trying to rile him up by talking trash. So I am playing it cool on the outside, but on the inside, I am going crazy. I'm doing backflips. I'm celebrating. I'm like, yo, I'm about to get this dub. And not only am I about to get this dub, but I'm about to lay the smack down. Shout out to Rock, man. So second half starts, and he starts to come back. Long story short, 28-0 run in the second half. He wins 28-0 run in the second half. He wins 35-28, scores a touchdown late in the fourth quarter to win. And I am distraught, because how did I just blow a 21-point lead and give up 28 unanswered? And again, we are young kids, competitive kids who normally talk trash to each other. Quentin didn't really talk crazy to me after that. He talked a little bit, but he just tried to make me feel better about blowing this game to him, because he realizes I should have won. I realized I should have won, but I didn't do what I needed to do. Now, despite the fact that Quentin beat me at most of these athletic competitions and most of these video games, I always told myself that I'm right there with him. And that if I could just be a little bit better, if I could just play a little bit harder, right? If I could just practice on my game a little bit more, just shoot a few more free throws, shoot a few more jumpers, that I could beat this man, because I'm right there. And that, my friends, is the Lakers and the Nuggets. The Lakers, they've lost six straight playoff games to the Nuggets now, right? They got swept last year, down 2-0 right now, right? The margin of defeat in those six losses are 6 points. Two possessions, 6 points. They blew this lead up 20 in the third quarter, up 10 after three. And they are telling themselves, we're right there. We can beat what else they got over. We almost had them. We just got to practice a little bit harder in these games. We just got to be a little bit better, and we can turn this thing around. And I'm here to tell y'all, no, y'all can't. No, you cannot. When the Lakers clinched, I might put this in the video in post-production when I post this on YouTube. When the Lakers clinched the seventh seed, when they beat the Pelicans in the play-in game, at the conclusion of that game, I got on Twitter and I tweeted out, I would like to congratulate the Los Angeles Lakers on a good season, because I knew they were done, right? I even put on Twitter, I had a nice conversation back and forth with the Laker fan about this, that, man, should the Lakers kind of take a little bit of a dive against the Pelicans to go play the winner of the Kings and the Warriors playing game? Because if they win that game, I like their chances a lot more against OKC than I did against the Nuggets. I think the Nuggets are just a bad matchup for them, right? And for all the reasons you saw, Jamal Murray gets going, it's curtains for them. They're role players, which it's pretty much the same Denver team, except they've gotten a little bit younger with the role players, right? Christian Braun, who was there last year, but now Peyton Watson is getting run, right? Reggie Jackson, who was there, who got there late in the season, he spent the full season with them. So now he's a little bit more into the mix. And then you still have the main principles of Joker, of Aaron Gordon, of KCP, of Jamal Murray, right? Like, you have those guys. And I just think that when Joker says, okay, it's time for me to go get a bucket, he's going to go get a bucket, right? If and here's the scary thing about them being down 0-2. The Nuggets have shot abysmally from the field. Jamal Murray, until the fourth quarter, had not shot well at all in the first two games. I believe as a team, they shot 30% from three during these first two games. So if you look at that, they're only going to get better, guys. And if you look at what the Lakers did against OKC, they won the season series 3-1. Now, granted, regular season success is not an indicator of postseason success, but at least mentally, you know that if they got into a 4-7 game series with the OKC Thunder, they would feel a lot better about dealing with them in the first round than they would the Nuggets. And so we'll see what happens. But I just, again, I don't see a way that the Lakers were ever going to beat the Nuggets. And the media hyping y'all up to believe, oh, they can compete with them. They can compete, but can they beat them? That's the question. And right now the answer is no. And so, okay, oh, maybe they prove me wrong and they hold home court and we go back to Denver and it's a 2-2 series. Maybe. What I see happening is probably they win, they lose game three, and maybe they salvage things for a gentleman sweep, win game four, and then the Nuggets go home and take care of business and win game five. But one thing that's not about to happen, the Lakers are not about to beat the Nuggets four times in six games. You can take that to the bank. I'm not a gambler, but take that to the bank. They're not beating them four times in six games. And if they do, I get on here and say I was wrong, but I don't see it. Elsewhere across the association, real quick, I want to talk about OKC and New Orleans. To me, that was the first competitive game we had of all the game ones, right? To me, that's going to be one of the series. Hopefully they don't banish some of those games to NBA TV, but that's the series that has a chance to be highly fun and highly competitive because you have two young teams that are trying to figure out what it takes to win. OKC, who was a play-in participant last year, going from that to the number one seed is highly impressive. You have an MVP candidate in SGA, and they are going to be figuring this thing out as they go along, right? Like, I could see this being a six-game, potentially a seven-game series because they're going to have growing pains. And I don't know if Sam Presti can finesse it, but if he can somehow find a way to package picks to get to go grab Donovan Clingan, what is going to be OKC's downfall is the lack of a big man. You saw it in game one. Jonas Valanciunas went crazy on the boards. If they go again a seven-game series against Minnesota or Minnesota or Denver, their big men are going to eat them alive, even though technically Minnesota doesn't have a big man who plays with his back to the basket. But Rudy Gobert is going to have a huge rebounding advantage over OKC. And to me, that is the one thing that this team is missing, is they need to find not just someone who's 7 feet tall, but because I think Chet is like 7 feet 205, 215. They need someone who's 7 feet 270, 280, who can anchor down the inside and make sure that they get these defensive rebounds and make sure they can crash the boards for offensive rebounds. But to me, that's going to be one of the more interesting series. I'm trying to think what else we got. I mean, let me check and see what's going on with Boston and Miami. Boston, Miami was making it a game in game two. And they're up five right now. I mean, look, man, I want to make fun of Heat culture, in part because there's this whole thing of, well, they just want it more than you. Which is why they win all the time. They save everything up for the playoffs and they become one of the toughest outs because they're gritty, they're gutty. I mean, they're basically grit and grind Florida Gulf Coast, which was grit and grind was the calling card of the Memphis Grizzlies, of the Marc Gasol, first team all defense, Tony Allen and Michael Conley, right? Right. Like, these guys are basically going to outwork you to death. And that is why they're successful. And that is why they win. And so I wanted to see that die a painful death, but I feel like they're going to make this a little harder for Boston than it should be. Let me go back over. Let's see what else we got in the East. Pacers Bucks should be an interesting series going forward. Pacers were able to steal a game on the road. Not steal a game because they blew them out, but they were able to even things up at one. They say a series doesn't start until the home team loses. So now we have a series. They're going back to Indiana, which should be rocking because it's going to be their first playoff game in quite some time. I'm pretty sure the end of the Paul George era was the last time they had a playoff game in a playoff series. So that's going to be rocking. And if Tyrese Halliburton can ever – I know he suffered the injury, and I feel like he hasn't been the same since. But these two teams have a little bit of history from the play-in and through some regular season games. And so they might be able to make that a little bit more of an interesting series. I'm trying to think, what other am I missing? I'm missing one other series in the East. Am I? I feel like I talked about one seed, two seed, three seed. No, I got them all. I got them all. Oh, Orlando and Cleveland. Listen, NBA TV classic right now. Until the Magic can prove that they can be competitive with Cleveland, that series doesn't matter. All right, so jump back over to the West. I talked about OKC, talked about Denver. Minnesota, man. Ant-Man, Anthony Edwards. Like, we could, granted, he didn't have a great game in game two, but he had a little bit of a clairvoyant message of saying, look, they got KD, we got Jaden McDaniels. I am incredibly, well, sad, because if everything holds to seeding, we're going to get Minnesota and Denver in the second round, and that is a series that I wish we could get in a conference final, because to me, whoever wins that series is going to the NBA Finals. And if you remember what Denver said last year, to a man, they said that the Minnesota series was their toughest series. So that is going to be a heavyweight showdown. That is going to be one of the more entertaining series in this entire playoffs. And sadly, it's going to be a semifinals matchup. But that's the one I'm looking forward to. Is this the year that Luke was going to make another conference finals? Right? Because I just don't, as much as I want to buy into the Clippers, the problem with the Clippers, as always, is health. Kawhi came back last night, but it did not matter because the Dallas Mavericks were able to steal a game at home from the Clippers, and now they head to Dallas for their next game. And if they're able to beat the Clippers, I think that the Mavericks, have between Kyrie and between Luka, have the team that can take out OKC in that semifinals to set up a finals matchup against either Minnesota or Denver. And Dallas is so, they can be so streaky. They ended the season really well, where I could see Dallas, if everything aligns correctly, they could shock a Denver or a Minnesota. I don't see it, but they have the team as it stands right now. They have the path where a conference finals trip, the second in Luka's career, is not out of the question, health provided, right? But we'll see what happens, man. I'm excited to watch these games unfold. The thing that I hope people walk away from this playoffs, the big takeaway, I know there's a lot about defense, scoring was crazy, and I know after the All-Star break, the referees started to call things a little bit differently. But I do hope that the thing that people take away is that these are the best players in the world. And these, if you watch these games, watch these tightly contested games and look at the shots these guys are making. They're not getting easy shots. It isn't a highway to the lane all the time. They are taking and making shots with hands in their face, people running at them, sometimes can't see the rim because a guy has his hand in front of their face as they take the shot. Like, I'm just saying, these are the best players in the world, man. And we have to put some respect on their names, all right? All right, so let me know what y'all think about that. What do y'all think about the Lakers' chances? What do y'all think about who's coming out the East, who's coming out the West? Is this, should Boston have a cakewalk to the finals? I think they should. The East is incredibly weak this year. It's not as strong as it is. We'll have to see what happens with Giannis and the Bucks. Can they hold off the Pacers? So on and so forth. Hit me up at Brains and Bars on Facebook, IG, Twitter, and Instagram. All right. So part of the reason I wanted to do this show is because A Ward and I started a mock draft. And so we were supposed to go four teams a week leading up to the NFL draft, which is tomorrow. Round one is tomorrow. I'm thinking about doing something special for the draft. We'll see. We might have to postpone it until next year because we're people with jobs, so has a lot going on. My guy Ward has one of the biggest battles of his career coming up this weekend, and so he's prepping for that. So we'll see what happens. But I wanted to be on my Smack White. I wanted to complete the objective, and so I am going to do the final eight picks of this mock draft. So I, without further ado, if you've been following us, like I said, we had been going week by week, about four teams a week, going through making picks in this mock draft all the way to 32, which the Chiefs have the final pick in the first round. I am super interested to see what's going to take place, who's going to trade up, you know. And I think this particular season, draft season, I think this particular draft season there hasn't been a ton of storylines, right? We know who the number one pick is going to be. It's going to be Caleb Williams. And so I feel like the NFL media has tried to create storylines to draw people in and get them interested, right? To create headlines. So at a certain point, it was, oh, well, J.J. McCarthy could be the number two overall pick, or he could be the number three overall pick, and Drake May is starting to fall. Now it's Jaden Daniels is not happy with Washington, and having, you know, the eliminate where you had the four quarterbacks all in town at the same time with the Commanders owner. Now it was a certain couple of weeks ago. Oh man, we could have six quarterbacks go in the first round. Michael Penix is rising. Bo Nix rising. Like they could go to Minnesota or they could go to Denver, right? Like all these fabricated storylines to try to create interest around this event. Now the story is the day before the mock is that, oh, teams are going to be aggressive and trading up and going to get as many offensive tackles because that's what people are really targeting. And so I hope that we as fans have been savvy enough to cut through the noise and not buy into all of the clickbait that the media has tried to sell us, right? These guys right now are like during the tax season, when you got the guy out there spinning the board and he's doing the Charleston and he's doing the jig and he's trying to wave you into the tax place, to the Liberty tax place, so you can go get your taxes done. That's what's happening right now. It's a lot of carnival barking happening in the media as we get ready for this draft, right? But here we are. We're going to go through these final eight picks on the clock right now. Got the Green Bay Packers. You see what Pro Football Focus has as their needs. And I think it's interesting, right? Like to me, I look at a couple of positions. I do look at the offensive line position. There's a Graham Barton from Duke. There's a Jordan Morgan from Arizona. And I think Nate Wiggins from a cornerback from Clemson. To me, if I'm the GM, that's the pick that I'm looking at making. And here's why. Because they drafted Eric Stokes at corner, I believe, in the second round, but he has not made the splash that Green Bay thought he would make. And so for me, with this pick, I am going to take Nate Wiggins, cornerback from Clemson, one of the best cornerbacks in the nation last year, as their pick to try to shore up that secondary. And maybe they push Eric Stokes to be the backup corner, or Keyshawn Nick, or at least put it to you like this. At least they create the competition going into camp of, it's Wiggins versus Stokes for that opposite slot position or opposite corner position to Jaire Alexander, who's one of the best cornerbacks in the game. So I'm going to go Nate Wiggins. And I think also to me, this creates a depth issue because Jaire Alexander has been banged up the last couple of years. Injuries in their secondary have been an issue as a whole for Green Bay the last couple of years. So drafting a Nate Wiggins to add depth, maybe some competition for that opposite corner position of Jaire Alexander, that is the pick for the Green Bay Packers for me. So we're going to make that selection. All right. So next up, we got the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Tampa Bay made a commitment to Mike. What is Mike's last name? Mike Evans, excuse me. They made a commitment to Mike Evans, re-signing him in free agency. They also made a commitment to Baker Mayfield, bringing him back. So I feel like offensively, they're kind of set. You know, they still have their wide receivers intact. I can see his name. I'm about to pull up their depth chart. Chris Godwin, excuse me. They got Chris Godwin. They got Mike Evans. They got Rashad White at running back. Cade Otton at tight end. I think they're pretty set on the offensive side of the ball. I also think that they're pretty set on the offensive line for the most part. To me, defensive line and corner, because they traded away Carlton Davis. And to me, let me pull up their depth chart because I want to make sure I get this young man's name right. He's number 35 for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, but at corner. He was a mark last year, right? He got beat a lot. Jamel Dean, he got torched a lot last year. And so I'm looking at the secondary in particular. And I'm looking at TJ Tampa out of Iowa State, looking at Ennis Rakestraw from Mizzou. On the D line, I'm looking at Chop Robinson and I'm looking at Darius Robinson. And you guys might think this is a reach. I'm pretty sure that some draft analysts might think this is a reach, but I'm going to go TJ Tampa. TJ Tampa is, I think he's 6'2 corner out of Iowa State. I'm not going to pretend and act like I've been breaking down the tape and I can break down all of what he does well and what he doesn't do well. But I do think, if I remember looking at some of the draft breakdown of him, he's a good cover corner. He's a physical corner. And I think that is one of the hallmarks of that Tampa defense. And so I'm going to go with TJ Tampa as the Carlton Davis replacement for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. All right. So next up on the clock, so is the Arizona Cardinals. So here's the thing. In my earlier mock, if let's go back up to the top, I know people said they're going to take Marvin Harrison Jr. I had them taking Joe Alt because I felt like the Cardinals needed to solidify their left tackle for the next 10 to 12 years, right? And so I said they had another pick in the first round. This is where they could go receiver, and this is where we're going receiver. And we're going A.D. Mitchell. We're going A.D. Mitchell. His running mate from Texas, Xavier Worthy, I think is someone, if I'm in this position, that I'm considering, maybe a Ladd McConkey, but I'm going A.D. Mitchell. That gives them somebody with size, someone who can burn you deep, and who's a decent route runner. So I'm going with A.D. Mitchell for the Cardinals. Here's a team who needs a lot. This is a team that needs a lot. They let a lot of guys walk in free agency. Obviously, they got rid of their all-pro wide receiver, Stephon Diggs, in a trade. And for it, to me, when I looked at how this board was shaking out, my original thought was, oh, this is Xavier Worthy. They got to go wide receiver here, right? They got to start to build back up that wide receiver room. But listening to how Brandon Bean has spoken about the wide receiver room and saying that, well, we just need guys who are going to play the right way, if you will. And I'm looking at Jerzon Newton still on this board, and I'm saying to myself, if I'm Brandon Bean, I'm getting that guy. And I'm trying to, if the game plan is we don't need a true number one receiver, if the game plan is wide receiver by committee, and I think the tight ends are going to figure a lot more heavily into the passing game equation for the Bills than they have in previous years, running the ball both with Josh Allen and with James Cook, I think that right now we're trying to build that. They're looking at the Chiefs blueprint is what essentially what I'm getting at. They're looking at the Chiefs blueprint and saying, we need to get like that. And so how do you do that? The Chiefs built a great defense through the draft and some timely free agent signings. And I think that is the pick for the Buffalo Bills. Jerzon, or as everybody's calling him now, Johnny Newton, for whatever reason. Johnny Newton is the pick out of Illinois on the interior to pair him with Ed Oliver and try to wreak some havoc up the middle. Because again, following that Chiefs blueprint, who was the game wrecker in a lot of key critical moments? Chris Jones. So Jerzon Newton off the board to the Buffalo Bills. All right, so Detroit Lions. This is a team that could use Graham Barton, who has some flexibility both on the interior and as a tackle. They just paid Penei Sewell. They gave him his bread. Let me see who the other left tackle is. I can see his face. I believe it's Taylor Decker, but I want to make sure I got that right. Let's see. Yep, Taylor Decker at left guard, and he is going into his eighth year. And so they could potentially go Graham Barton here. Looking at their corners, they went and got Carlton Davis in free agency. Although Carlton Davis had some issues, they got Amik Robertson in free agency as well. So, you know, I mean, I think we already got my guy Cooper DeJean, who I think would have been a good fit here. Let me see what else we got at corner before I go Graham Barton. You know what? The Lions are a team that is unorthodox, right? They got a lot of flack for going linebacker and running back in the draft. Some people might not like this pick, but I like Mikey Sainristil out of Michigan. I think he's a kid who has positional flexibility. I think he's a kid who you can play at a slot corner. You can play him on the outside if you want to play him a couple of snaps at safety. I think they're a team that's looking to try to rebuild that back end because that back end struggled a lot last year. So, and that's somebody that I'm actually in the moment, they weren't on my board. In my board, I had TJ Tampa, Ennis Rakestraw, and Graham Barton. But I'm going to go, you know, the Lions are, they're a wild card, right? They're a team that likes to take risks, right? They're a team that if they're playing blackjack, I made this joke on the show about 2 weeks before it became really popular on Twitter. They're a team that playing blackjack, they hit on 17. And so I think they're going to take a risk here and go with Sainristil out of Michigan. All right. So now to the Ravens. They're a team that I think that could use a wide receiver. They're a team that I think could use someone on the interior. And if the Buffalo Bills had not gone wide receiver, I could have seen them, or if they, the Bills had gone wide receiver and left Jerzon Newton on the board, I could see that easily being the pick for the Ravens. But here, I think they're going to go wide receiver. And even though he's going to be a little bit ways down the board, I think the Ravens are going to take Xavier Worthy out of Texas. You put him alongside the young man that they got from Boston College last year, and I think you really got something to help Lamar be an even more effective passer of the football than he was last year. Zay Flowers, right? They just re-signed Rashad Bateman. I like Nelson Agholor, but I don't think he's the future. Xavier Worthy, Bateman, Flowers to go along with Mark Andrews at tight end. I like that a lot for them. I like that a lot for the Ravens. All right, 31. This is my squad now. 31, my squad, the Niners. I have been beating down the door for them to go with a tackle. All due respect to their right tackle, Colton McKivitz. To me, he is a liability. He's not the answer. And originally, I had them taking Graham Barton if he was still on the board. Let me look at some other tackles that are out here. Kingsley Suamaitaia, excuse me, forgive me for butchering that name. He's somebody I thought they could go. They could go Tyler Guyton here. They could go Jordan Morgan here. However, they could also go with one of the corners because they need to solidify their corner. So Ennis Rakestraw could be a guy they look at here. But I am going to go. Let me see. Who did I have here? I'm going to go in a defensive line. They're always looking to improve their defensive line. And I got them going after Chop Robinson out of Penn State. Really good edge rusher. Very athletic edge rusher. I think he needs some polishing and refinement on technique. And I think with Chris Korsak, the defensive line coach, I think that can be the guy to get Chop up to speed and put him on the opposite side of Nick Bosa, because they've had a rotating door ever since the D4 trade of trying to get guys in who can be the other explosive pass rusher on the other side. I think they go on the D-line, get Chop Robinson, and they go from there. And so last, but certainly not least, the defending two-time Super Bowl champion Kansas City Chiefs. This is an interesting one because we saw what happened with Rashee Rice, his issue. Adam Schefter came out and said that at worst, there's going to be a several-game suspension for Rice. We saw what that receiving corps did all season long. We saw how Andy Reid hyped up Kadarius Toney. Hey, Sky Moore has not come through. Justin Watson, to me, is your fourth or fifth wide receiver. He should not be getting third wide receiver snaps, second wide receiver snaps. And so it's a wide receiver offensive tackle. And I have no idea where to go. I've seen, you know, shout out to D-Mac from Kingdom Cast. He's talked about Jordan Morgan, his arms not being long enough to be able to be the type of player that they go for at offensive tackle. Tyler Guyton is a guy that I'm looking at on the offensive tackle there. Maybe if you wanted to reach for Kingsley, I guess. But to me, that's a reach. And so now I'm looking at wide receiver, Troy Franklin, Ladd McConkey, Keon Coleman, Roman Wilson, Ricky Pearsall. I have spent most of my day thinking about this 32nd pick, or at least when I thought about the 32nd pick, going between Tyler Guyton and Ladd McConkey. And right now, if I'm Brett Veach, you got to solidify that left-hand side, right? You got to solidify that left-hand side. And so this is the first round mock. I can't wait to do this again next year. You can see what we did here. And let me know what y'all think. How many of these you think will land at this number or with this particular team? Who's going to go where? I do hope that my QB crush, which is Michael Penix Jr., I hope he does end up being a first-round draft pick because I think he is that good. I'm not as sold on Bo Nix. Maybe a couple of these quarterbacks do move up, but this is our mock draft, man. Tell me what y'all think, how y'all call it. And that is our time for this week, man. We appreciate y'all. Appreciate those who stopped by. Appreciate those who watch. Please remember, you can check out every episode of It's a Black and White Thing by going to the podcast app of your choice, searching for It's a Black and White Thing, sharing the content, giving us 5 stars, sharing the broadcast. You can also find us on YouTube by searching Brains and Bars. Hit the notification bell. Hit the like button. Share the broadcast. Tell a friend to tell a friend it's those boys again. You can follow us on social media, TikTok, IG, Twitter, and Facebook at Brains and Bars. And that's it, man. Until next time, it's been a Black and White Thing. Y'all have a good night. Be easy.